Today we have as our storyteller, Rosie, and how do you pronounce your last name? Couture?
Couture.
Okay.
Think contraire, but Couture.
All right. Be that way.
Or think extraordinaire.
Oh, I like that one.
That's a good one. That's a good bit.
Rosie, do you happen to have a website?
Yes, I do. It is www.rosiecouture.com.
Okay, spell Rosie Couture.
Rosie is R-O-S-I-E, and then Couture is C-U-T-R-E-R. So that's R-O-S-I-E-C-U-T-R-E-R.
.com. Okay. Rosie, we met at the Chicken Festival and had a wonderful time there. Because of that, we got some video of you, which are going to be put up on the site along with this interview. Where and when were you born?
Well, I was born up here in northeast Kansas, in the capital of Kansas, Topeka. And I was born in a Catholic hospital with my mother and father in attendance and my two older brothers. Of course, grew up in the 50s in northeast Kansas here. And Topeka's not a big town. It's a fairly small town. A lot of people say it's the biggest little town that they know. Because it seems like everybody you walk down the street, if you talk to somebody for a while, you eventually know somebody they know. It seems that way anyway. Anyway, I've been living here my whole life. Oh, and my husband will say, how long has that been? And I will say, 59 years now. So.
And your present family is?
Well, let me kind of give you some background on that, because it's kind of a different situation I'm living in. I did not get married until I was 39. And I met a widower with three daughters. Sounds kind of like a fairy tale, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Anyway, his two oldest daughters were, one was in college and the other one was just getting out of college, or out of high school, excuse me. And the youngest was just going into high school. So they were all pretty well getting up there, you know, either out of the house or getting ready to leave the house. And when we got married, I ended up with an immediate family, and just several years after that, everybody started having grandkids, or everybody started having children, so now I have eight grandkids in the span of the 19 years we've been married, so it's been kind of a wild ride here.
Yeah, I can imagine.
For someone who is single up until almost 40, but I do also have, of course, living in Topeka my whole life, I have friends who I consider family here, and my two brothers live here, and their children, my nieces and nephews. And
which you could dote on them and then send them home.
Yes, I can dote on everybody and send them home. I didn't have to really raise any of my own, except maybe the stepdaughter, and we went through high school and college together. And anyway, so it's been an interesting trip. I would have never guessed that my life would have ended up this way.
How did you start telling stories?
Well, I taught elementary school, first, second, third grade, for about 23 years, and I also have a degree in theater. I continued through my teaching career to be involved in theater, and but we'd also have storytellers who came to our school. Very good. We had a wonderful librarian who was very open to bringing storytellers in, and looking at it, you know, being a storyteller now, I didn't realize how wonderful a librarian we had at our school. I just thought most librarians were like this in schools, but they're not, where they would bring in storytellers. Every year we would have a different storyteller. Usually they were from this area. I don't think she ever had national tellers in, but they were the prime of the crop in the Kansas area. I don't know if you ever heard of Denny Day.
I've heard the name. I've never seen him.
He's in Kansas City.
Okay.
Today, he's in Kansas City. I believe we had Priscilla Howe maybe one year. She's from Lawrence. And we had Sylvia Scott from Kansas City and Jim Two Crows Wallen from Kansas City. He's a member of RAPS.
Yep.
Anyway, we had some really, you know, high-quality people come through. And after I got to head towards 50, I began thinking that maybe I might want to try something else with the second half of my life. And I was thinking that storytelling would be something I would enjoy doing and could make a living at. So I talked with my husband, and he was open to it. We were, you know, fairly well off, so I went for it.
Oh, such a problem. Being fairly well off, that is.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem. Somebody has to do it. But anyways, I went to Priscilla Howe to begin with. She lives in Lawrence, and mm-hmm. got some coaching from her, and then went to a lot of festivals and conferences where they'd have storytelling workshops, and eventually started my own business, full-time business, in 2000.
How far have you traveled to tell stories?
I've traveled as far south as Oklahoma City. They have a Choctaw Festival, Land Run Festival, down in Choctaw, Oklahoma, outside of Oklahoma City. I've been doing that for several years now. To the east, I've been to St. Louis, told at the National Conference there, and also there's Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which is about an hour south of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate to be invited to be a regional teller there. And farther north, I've been up in Beatrice, Nebraska. They have a National Homestead Monument up there. The Park Service runs that, and I've told folk tales up there with that. And I've been to Colorado just once to tell stories.
Well, that's been a ways.
Denver. I've been to Denver once for a national conference. That was just this past year. I do a lot in Kansas, mainly because I'm on the Kansas Arts Commission roster of touring artists.
Okay.
And so I go all over Kansas. I never realized how big Kansas was until I started traveling. Because you go to southeast Kansas, some of those towns down in there, you get some bookings. You're almost going to New Mexico.
Yeah. What was your family's reaction to you starting to tell stories? You mentioned your husband was for it.
He was for it. I've done theater my whole life, so they were kind of used to the theater thing, but everybody was kind of puzzled about this storytelling, and some of my family members still are. They still haven't had the time to come see me in some things. They were puzzled at first, but I take that back. They probably all see me tell stories around the house and stuff, but never in a public performance.
Well, now you can put them onto the website.
Yeah, I put them on the website, and they should be able to show up. But they were puzzled at first. But now they're delighted because some of the stories I tell, you know, are folk tales. But as you know, when you retell a story, a folk tale or an old camp story or something, you can kind of plug in people in your own life into the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And use their names and that sort of thing. And they get a kick out of that. And out of hearing themselves in a story. I also have a couple of personal stories I tell about growing up in Topeka, especially with my brothers. They just get a hoot out of listening to that and hearing about the elementary school we grew up in. Of course, I went to Catholic school, so that's a lot. There's a lot of
okay.
A lot of material there, and so it's a lot. And just growing up in the 50s, you know, there's a lot, just that whole era just has such a taste to it that
yeah,
been delightful.
What part of telling did you find the hardest to learn or do?
The hardest was not to memorize. I was a theater person, and you memorized everything. When I first started telling stories, even though I was told not to memorize, it was so hard to get away from that written, printed page. I remember the first time I told in front of an audience, a real audience, was at my school. We had a talent show at school, and the teachers could get up and do something, and I just started storytelling at that time. And I thought, well, I can get up there and do that. And I got up there, and this brings me to the second thing, the hardest thing that's about storytelling. I got there, and, you know, like I said, it was hard just to tell the story, not have the lines memorized. But the other thing that was so terrifying was looking everybody in the face, not having that third wall. And, you know, I've never been so scared in my life. I mean, I could hardly talk. My mouth was so dry. I got through it okay, but I got off and I thought, my Lord, what is wrong? I've gotten over that now, but that was the first time, because I told stories, you know, one-on-one to people, but to actually get up in front of 200 people and actually look at them, as opposed to being in the theater and not being able to see them, was just scary. I mean, you know, it's like you're, all of a sudden, you're putting yourself in front of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Not your character
yeah.
in a play. It is you up there telling a story, and that's, you feel very vulnerable at first. You get over it. And you also learn how nice people are. They're a lot nicer than you think.
Yeah. Well, what did you find the easiest to learn or do?
The easiest was I like doing music, and I think that was the easiest to add music to my programs. I don't always have music in my stories. I try to when I can. That just, I don't know, I just love, I've always loved musical theater, and just being able to add music to some stories. One of the stories I plan on doing with Russian Folktale, and I've added some words to it, and the story itself has a rhyme, a poem in it, and so it just was came natural to be able to add music to it. So
okay.
That seems like the easiest. And it's fun just to help break up the programs to have a little music in between.
Yeah.
People to talk.
Who is your favorite teller now, and have you met them?
Yes, I would have to say, I don't know up to this point, up until this year, whether I really had a favorite teller, but I discovered one at Cape Girardeau last, I was in Cape Girardeau telling at their festival, which, by the way, is a wonderful festival in Cape Girardeau every spring. Barbara McBride Smith, who's from Oklahoma, she is just delightful and is just so natural and just so inventive. And she's the type, she just got up there and sat on a stool and told stories. Just, it was great. So I think, you know, she's the one I kind of like to start emulating.
What is considered the best kind of audience for you?
Well, let me tell you, I was in a nursing home telling stories a couple of years ago, and they took me into the Alzheimer's wing. And this is one of those gigs where they hire you to come for a week, and they send you all over the place. So, you know, you really don't have a choice of where to go. They just send you. And so I went to this Alzheimer's wing and started telling some stories. I was really scared because, you know, some of the people were acting a little odd. But once I started telling the stories, everybody calmed down and started listening. And some of the people there, when I started doing some of the music, they were starting to sing along. And the attendants were saying how wonderful it was because the people didn't respond a lot to stuff. It seemed like it kind of brought them out of wherever they were at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to preschools used to scare me, and now I delight in those. They're the most fun kids, and will, you know, have no inhibitions about joining in with you.
Right.
I don't know. You know, even, you know, a lot of people are saying that middle school audiences are difficult. I find if you just don't judge that they can be enjoyable and will start warming up to you, but you've got to kind of prove it to them. So I guess my answer would be audience that
will sit and listen.
that will listen and, you know, is open-minded to you. And I feel like I've developed a feel for all ages. I just love telling to anybody, like you say, who will listen.
What was the draw that caused you to come to the Chicken Festival?
When I first started telling, I knew some people that were in the area, like I say, Priscilla Howe, and it was a way to get to network and get to know people who lived in my area. So now it's kind of like family. You go back, it's like a reunion, and you see people from Northeast Kansas area and from, you know, we have people from come up from Oklahoma or over from Missouri and down from Nebraska. So it's. I think mainly to get a feel to have a community, some people, a group you belong with. Because, you know, as a storyteller, you're isolated. And
yeah.
You're working in your little office at home. And you go out and you do performances, but then you don't see those people after the performance. You know, it's not like you have a constant contact with
mm-hmm.
them. So, you know, it's kind of lonely. So it is nice to have a group of people that you can meet with and feel like you belong to.
Well, sorry, Rosie, but our time is now up. So I want to thank you for the interview. And for those who are listening, please take a look around the webpage. Rosie does have a story dump right next to us. And also, there are some products that you may want to take a look at the bottom of this page or over on the side by where it says Fairy Tale Stories Store. Thank you, and have a good day.